Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Tet Vovim, the Aleph, 8 lines down. Tanu Rabbanan, Lo Tavo El Beito Lavot Avoto. Says you may not enter into his house in order to take the mashkon, in order to take the collateral. Beito Iata Nichnas. You do not have permission to enter into the house. Avalata Nichnas the Beito Shel Arev. But you do have permission to enter into the house of the guarantor. V'cheinu Omer. And the Pasuk in Mishlei tells us, Lekach bigdo ki arav zar. So here it seems like a tzivui, which is take his clothing, ki arav zar, because he provided surety, he provided a pledge to another party. So from here it sounds like there's a tzivui to go in and take the collateral from him because he is a zar. The truth is that the remainder of the pasuk is ube'ad nachriya chablehu. So over there you actually have the term chabalah. That is what the Torah restricts, lo yachbo, that the Torah uses that term. And so the latter part of the pasuk seemingly is even permitting chabalah, which is entering into the house of the party. So over here you have a right to enter into the house of the arev. All those restrictions that apply to the loved do not apply to the arev for one of two reasons. Either because we looked at this as if it is the origination of the loan. And as far as the origination of the loan, we said before that one is permitted to take collateral at that time. So to here, when the individual is going in and having the arev become the real counterparty to the loan now, because the loved, the debtor, is defaulting on it, then it's as if you're originating the loan to the arev at that time, and you have permission to take collateral at that moment. Or you have to say that part of the problem of entering into the house of the loved, the debtor, is that he's embarrassed. All the reasons that we spoke about before, that you're taking advantage of him. The arev doesn't have any of those issues. The arev's not embarrassed about it because he wasn't the one who defaulted on the loan. He's also not the person who you're taking advantage of because the assumption was that the debtor would pay. The arev didn't expect to be the one who was going to pay, so you don't think about taking advantage of the guarantor. So for all those reasons, you do have permission to enter into the house of the arev. Ve'omer. In addition to that, it says in the pasuk in Mishlei, Bini, im aravta l'reyacha, takata lazar kapecha. If you have given surety to your friend, or you've given a pledge to a stranger, nokashta bi'imreficha, you were trapped by the words of your mouth, nilkadeta, you were ensnared bi'imreficha, with the words of your mouth. Now, obviously referring over here to the fact that you guaranteed a loan, and then the loved, the debtor, defaulted on it. So that's what it means now that you're nokashta or nilkadita, that you've been trapped in this situation, is because you made a pledge, and now the pledge is coming due because of the fact that the loved defaulted. Asei zot efo bni v'inatzel. Do this. I'm giving you advice, my son, what to do in order to save yourself in this case. Kivata b'kafre'acha. Because now you are in the hand of your friend, meaning you're at the mercy of your friend. Leich hitrapes. Go and humble yourself, or urehav reyecha, or placate your friend. So now here the Gemara is looking at this and saying, imamon yeshlo b'yadecha. If you have a monetary obligation towards this individual, who hater lo pisat yad, you should open up or release the palm of your hand, which is the latter part of the pasuk, which says, leich hitrapes. So over there it means to open up. When it says to humble yourself, it means open up and make the payment that you are obligated to make. Vim lav, if that's not the problem, meaning if the issue is not a monetary issue by which making payment will solve the problem, then harbe alav reim, bring a lot of friends along with you. And that comes from urahav reyecha, that you should placate your friend. Placating your friend is by using the word rahav, almost like harbe, make a lot of, but bring a lot of friends in order to placate him. Have others come and try to convince him to forgive you for whatever transgression there was. So now, if you go back in the pasuk, the duplication of the language of nokashta b'imrei picha unilkarata b'imrei picha are two different issues, the way that the Gemara is reading this solution, which is that here, if you extended credit by becoming a guarantor, so sometimes you can be trapped, be imreficha, which is that you have a monetary obligation because of your words or because of your commitment. Sometimes nilkadata, you are ensnared by imrei ficha because you said something that offended the other party. So now, either you are now monetarily obligated to him, or you're, in a sense, quote-unquote, indebted to him because of the things that you said to him, where you offended him or you did something that upset him. So the solution to the problem is, if it's a monetary problem, open up your hand and pay to solve that problem. If it is a problem where you offended him or somehow you said the wrong thing, Rav Re'echa, placate him by bringing lots of friends, trying to soften him up and convince him that you are really sorry about what you said in order to rectify the situation. So here, speaking about the Arev, the reason the Gemara is speaking here in terms of the Arev is to show that an Arev has a different status. In the first place, that the Arev is not subject to the restrictions of the Mashkon here, of the Loveh, as well as the Arev is responsible to pay. I mean, that if the default happens, and it's unfortunate that now you're on the hook, but you got to make good on it, and you have to make the payment. Sachini, another way of looking at this, which is the equivalent, as Rashi says, of Davar Acher, Lebeito. It says in the Pasuk, you're not allowed to enter into the house of the Loveh. It says, L'tovo el Beito, l'avot avuto. Lebeito iata nichnas. To his house you may not enter when it is a loan, when it is a Loveh. You're allowed to enter in if it's to collect your wages for hauling for him, for being a schlepper for him, the schar chamar, for being a mover for him, a long distance hauler for him, the schar pundak, if Rashi says he rented out the motel from you, the bed and breakfast, or if he stayed in the bed and breakfast, the schar duyuk naot, or for the wages for his painting murals for you, or making designs for you, some sort of aesthetic, artistic work that he did on your behalf. In those cases, you have permission to enter into the house, because they don't come under the category of a lover. Since they're not on the category of lover, they're not subject to lo tavo el beito, la voto voto, that you're not allowed to enter the house. In all these instances, you do have permission to enter into the house. Yochal afilu zakfan alav bimilveh. I would think that that would remain true even if after these wages become due, you agree to postpone the payment of wages, basically to lend him the money until he has the ability to pay you for those wages. Tamalomar mashat mi'uma. That's the beginning of the pasuk. Tegita shebereyacha. So the beginning of the pasuk makes it clear that this is a case where you are a creditor to the debtor. So in that case, lo tavo beito, you may not enter the house. So that's in a relationship that is at the outset a creditor-debtor relationship. And that's what gives the dispensation here to enter in all these instances, because these aren't creditor-debtor relationships. On the other hand, if it changes from being a relationship of wages into a relationship of creditor-debtor, because he doesn't pay you the wages on time, how do we know that that's subject to the same rule? Because it says, mashat mi'uma, that any type of loan is subject to this rule. So even though at the outset it was not a creditor-debtor relationship, nevertheless, since it then changed into a creditor-debtor relationship, it's still subject to the same rules, and therefore, lo tavo beito, la vo tavo to, you do not have permission to go in and take the mashkon. There is a question that is asked by the Rishonim over here with regards to the taking of collateral by these individuals who have permission to enter into the house, whether they have to be machzir, whether they have to return that collateral if the individual needs it. Because the whole din of machzirin, or according to those that believe misajrin for the Baal Chov, that's all because he's a debtor for a Baal Chov. Over here, where it's an issue of wages, maybe the individual is not a Baal Chov in that sense, and therefore if you take collateral, you might not have an obligation to return it to him. So the Torah brings down a machloket rishonim with regards to this matter, as to whether there is an obligation to return the item once you've taken it here with permissibility, and you have permission to enter the house, and it's not subject to all the rules of your typical meshkon. This is a very famous Mishnah, because of the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that comes out of this Mishnah, which has to do with Dorshim Taimed Dekra, has to do whether we are Doresh, the reasons behind the mitzvot, or behind the Tzukim. And here we'll have that machloket, but it's based on this pasuk. This is the key pasuk upon which it is based. Almana, a widow, ben she ania, ben she ashira. Whether she is impoverished or whether she is wealthy, eime mashkeninota. We do not take collateral from her, shenamar, because the pasuk says, lo tachbol beged almana. It says you may not take as collateral the clothing of an almana. Now the truth is that over here, there's a machloket as to whether this is limited. The Shulchan Aruch Broing brings from the Riaz that maybe the restriction against taking something from an almana is only when it's a beged, only when it's actually clothing. If it was other items, they suggest that possibly it would be mutar to take them because the Torah only restricts beged almana. Others suggest that it's not the case, that taking anything from an almana is problematic. Beged almana, I would suggest, is just a very personal item of the almana. So it's the most exaggerated form of taking collateral, and the Torah is making it clear that you have no right to take anything from the almana, especially when you go after the beged almana. But that doesn't mean it's exclusive to a beged. It might mean that any item from the almana, but the Torah is telling people you may not or you don't have rights to take from the almana. Tanu Banan, so we have a bright almana, ben shi ania, ben shi ashira, which is what our Mishnah says. Eimim ashkeninota, you cannot take collateral. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So now we know that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. And here's the dissenting opinion, which is Rabbi Shimon Omer, ashira mim ashkeninota, ania eimim ashkeninota. If she's a wealthy widow, we do take collateral. If she's a poor widow, we don't take collateral. The reason being, shata chayav lachzirla. Because if she is impoverished and you take the collateral, you're going to be obligated to return the collateral to her when she needs it. And therefore, you're going to cause her to have a bad reputation amongst her neighbors. Here is this man entering her house in the morning, entering her house at night, and we're dealing with a single woman who's a widow. Obviously, the optics are not very pretty. And so because of that, we say, don't go in and take a mashkon. By an ashira, where you will not have to return the collateral, over there, we're going to suggest that maybe it's not an issue. That it's not an issue to take the collateral because you're not going to have to go back and forth. You're not going to have to enter to put it in. You're not going to have to enter to take it out. And so for that reason, there is no shemra that is associated with the almana ashira versus the almana aniya. For that reason, Rabbi Shimon believes that there's a limitation to this isur, and that limit of the scope is to a aniya and not to an ashira. And so here you have a machloket between them. Lememra, from here you would suggest the Rabbi Yehuda lo dairish time of the Kra. Rabbi Yehuda is not doresh the reasons behind the psukim. Rabbi Shimon, Darish, Taimed Dekra. And Rabbi Shimon is Doresh, Taimed Dekra. Both the Rambam, the Ramban, and many other Rishonim point out over here that this is not a hashkafic or philosophical approach to the Psukim, which is that Rabbi Yehuda views the Psukim as Gzerat HaKatuv, versus Rabbi Shimon says, no, we should give reasons to the Psukim. But they all write, the Rishonim, especially the Rambam, the Ramban, write that there's a mitzvah, and it's incumbent upon us to give reasons for the psukim, and that we should try to understand the reasons of the mitzvot. So then what is the machloket here? The machloket is whether those reasons can have normative implications, which is Rabbi Yehuda says, you can say whatever you want about the reason for the restriction. Nevertheless, whatever reason you give does not have impact on the nature of the mitzvah. So even though it makes sense what you're saying, Rabbi Shimon, that it should be limited to an aniyah, nevertheless, the pasuk says almanah. An almana is a widow, irrespective of her economic standing. And so even though you want to give a reason for the mitzvah, nevertheless, despite that reason, it applies across the board. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says, no, if I understand the reason behind the mitzvah, I can also limit the scope of the mitzvah. It has normative implications, the reasoning. And therefore, over here, we would say that it only applies to an aniyah, does not apply to an ashira. And that is the machloket that we're seeing here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The other thing to note is, despite the fact that we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon and we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that ain't dorshim time of the Krah, it still turns out that in most locations, when we speak about a mitzvah, we do use some of the reasons to limit the scope of the mitzvah. Maybe not on a broad basis or broad strokes like Rabbi Shimon does, but in smaller ways, at the edges, we do use the time of a mitzvah to limit its scope sometimes or to expand its scope. And truthfully, over here, it actually happens. There is a machloket as to whether this mitzvah should apply to women who are single. If the problem here is that it makes a shem ra b'shchenuta, the reason is because it causes her to have a bad reputation amongst her neighbors, then maybe we should look at the scope of the mitzvah not to be limited to an almanah, but even to other women who are in a position when they are alone. Anytime a woman is alone, this should have application. So that's one part of the scope, which would expand the scope of this. The other way is to take the scope and limit it, which is to say it only applies to an almanah min nisuin. It only applies to an almanah who's divorced from a full-fledged marriage, because then she's out of the auspices of her father, as well as she's lost her husband. So now she's really alone. On the other hand, when you're dealing with an almanah min erusin, where she returns to her father's house, maybe over there you could suggest that this would not apply because she's under the auspices of her father still. So here we see, even though we don't paskin like Rabbi Shimon, the Rishonim are still taking the reason that is mentioned by the Gemara and trying to either extrapolate or limit the scope of the mitzvah, despite the fact that we don't do it on a broad stroke basis and say, oh, it only applies to almanah aniyah, not to an almanah ashira. Now the Gemara says, va'ib chashmeinen lehu. Is it really true that that is their position? Titania, velo yarbe lo nashim. When it comes to a melech, it says he may not take many women or many wives. So when the pasuk says that he may not take many women or many wives, do we look at the reason behind that mitzvah? And therefore, based on that, we would determine how many wives he should take. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, marbe hu, you can have as many wives as you want. As long as they don't cause him to go astray, they don't cause him to leave the ways of the Torah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilu achat, even one wife, ve'im misira et libo, and she takes him off the derech, harizeh lo yisena, you can't marry her at all. Imkein, mamat omer lo mar lo yarbe lo nashim. So then what is the mitzvah of not having many wives? Afilu ke'avigayo. That is even like Abigail, the wife of David HaMelech, where David HaMelech credits her in Shmuel Aleph with saving him from killing in a situation where it may not have been appropriate. So even a woman like that who saved the king, it's not that she led him astray, she protected him. Even a woman like that, lo yerbe lo nashim, he can't have too many wives. Again, the Gemara in Sanhedrin darshins that is limited to 18 wives because of the criticism or the tochecha of Natan HaNavi to David HaMelech after he sins with Bathsheba, where he says, you could have had kahena v'kahena. You could have had like this and like this. David already has 6 wives, so kahena v'kahena would be another 6 and another 6, which would be a total of 18 wives. So that's how the Gemara learns out that there's actually a limitation here. But fundamental machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda says, the pasuk says, lo yabelo nashim, he may not have too many wives. Why? Velo yasur. Because they will take him off the derech. Lo yabelo nashim, velo yasur levavo. So they will not take his heart or lead his heart astray. Because of his av, lo yabelo mot. So Rabbi Yehuda sees the reasoning as being integral to the restriction, which is lo yabelo nashim. Why? Because velo yasur levavo. So as long as they're not yasur levavo, he can keep adding wives. That's the way Rabbi Yehuda learns it, which seemingly means that he's looking at time of the crop. He's looking at the reason in the pasuk. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says, lo yerbeh lo nashim is period. Even like Avigayo. Avigayo is not your surat livavo. So if it's not your surat livavo, why is there any limitation? It's clear that he draws a line between lo yerbeh lo nashim and lo yasur livavo, that they're independent. There's a limitation on the wives, irrespective of what they do. And if they do the wrong thing, then you can't have any of these wives at all. So Gemara says, the olam Rabbi Yehuda lo darish time of the krah. Normally, in most situations, Rabbi Yehuda is not darish time of the krah. V'shayni hocha dimifereish krah. Over here it's different because the Torah itself explicitly gives you the reason. I mean, as opposed to by the case of chavala, where it says, lo tatem mishpat ger yatom lo tachbo beged amanah, Over there, it doesn't tell you why. It simply makes a statement. Rabbi Shimon then comes and tells you what he thinks the reason for the mitzvah is. That's Doresh Taima Dekra. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda is not Doresh anything. It says, Lo Yabelo Nashim, Velo Yisar Levavo. Meaning it gives you explicitly the reason in the Pasuk, and that limitation, or that explanation, therefore defines the mitzvah. Velo Yabelo Nashim, Velo Yisur. My Taima, Lo Yabelo Nashim. What's the reason he may not have many wives? Mishum de lo yasur. So he sees a connection between those two statements in the pasuk. Rabbi Shimon, l'shitato, michde ba'alma darshina taima dekra. Always, or in other circumstances, we are doresh taima dekra. Lichtav rachmana lo yarbe. Then the pasuk should have just said, lo yarbe lo nashim. V'lo be'inan lo yasur. And I don't need the reason because I would have been doresh the reason anyway. Why shouldn't he have too many wives? So that they don't lead him astray. I would have known the reasoning that he shouldn't increase the number of wives, so that he doesn't get taken off the path. So then, what's the purpose of writing the reason if I would have done it anyway, and I would have come to the conclusion anyway? So, that's the limo that you have from that. It's a separate restriction, which is, any wife that leads him astray is restricted. So there's two restrictions. One is, lo yabelu nashim. That's one restriction, which is period. He can't have too many wives, no matter what type of wife. There's a second restriction is, v'lo yasur levavo. He may not take any wife that leads him astray. So that's where you would read the psukim. And again, this is that fundamental machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to Darshina and Taimi Dekra. And this is the key place or the core location where it's discussed, which is, lo tachbo beged amana. Right now, the next Mishnah says, "Hachuvelet erechayim over mishum lo taseh." One who takes as collateral the rechayim, the mill, is in violation of a lo taseh, because the pasuk says, "Lo yachavol rechayim v'rochev." It says in the pasuk, "You may not take the rechayim v'rochev ki nefesh hu chuvel v'chayav mishum shnei kelim." And he's now chayav for two kelim. Here's the answer to your question: when it says rechayim over here, this is rechayim in the generic sense, the entire mill. In the pasuk, rechayim varachev is the two pieces to the mill. The rechayim is the lower stone. Varachev, from the word rikiva, is the stone on top that rides on top of the lower stone that actually crushes that which is in or placed in the lower stone. So you have the rechayim varachev mentioned in the pasuk. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Yachvol rechayim varachev. So the assumption here being, and Tosafot spends a lot of time over here discussing what exactly is going on in this Mishnah in terms of Hatra'ah. So Tosafot concludes that this is even with a single Hatra'ah. If you warn him once and simply say to him, do not take it, then if he takes it, he'll be Chayav Shtayim, even though you warned him once. And Tosafot says that's the Chiddush here. The Chiddush here is, even if you say to him, you're not allowed to take these items, and he walks out with them, then the Mishnah is teaching you v'chayav mishum shnei kelim. You'll be chayav for each one of these kelim, because the pasuk explicitly mentions lo yachbol rechayim v'rochev. V'lo rechayim v'rochev bilvad, amru. It's not only a rechayim v'rochev that is restricted, ela kol davar shosim bo ochel nefesh, but rather any item by which ochel nefesh is done, shenemar, because the pasuk ends, ki nefesh hu chovel. So again, over here, it gives you some of the reasoning behind why you may not take the rechayim v'rochev, is because you're now eating into his ability to eat. Therefore, you have a problem. Ki nefesh hu chovel. You're taking away his nefesh, ochel nefesh, and therefore that's the problem over here. So that expands the scope of this, not include just rechayim v'rochev, but include other items as well. So now, in terms of the Mishnah, the person went in and took a rechayim v'rochev. He took the mill, the two stones of the mill. So he's in violation of two lavin. But what about the fact that he entered into her house to take the mill? So isn't there a separate restriction, which is not just about rechayim v'rochev, but lo tavol beito, lavo tavoto? What happened to that lav? Why is he only chayav two over here? He should be chayav three. So there are different approaches to this. One approach is of the Ramban, which seems like the simplest approach, is that the Mishnah is not dealing with that. In Ochanami, you are chayav for lo tavo el beito lavo tavoto. Just we dealt with that previously. This is talking about this specific restriction. And in the context of this restriction, these are the lavin. Not to say that's to the exclusion or the preclusion of lo tavo el beito. You also be chayav for that. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to suggest that the shliach beitin went in and took it. So even though he had permission to enter the house, assuming that we don't pass him like Shmuel, Shmuel said even the shliach beitin doesn't have a right to enter. But if you don't pass him like Shmuel, and you have a right to enter the house, the shliach beitin at least, then the problem of lo tavo el beito has been overcome. The problem of lo yachbol rechaim v'rochev is still in place, even for the shliach beitin. That's another way to deal with it. An additional way to deal with it is to say that chabalah only involves entering into the house itself. That means that if someone brings it out to you, then there's no issue of chabalah. And if you do that, then lo tavol beito lavo tavuto would not be a problem. But the difficulty with saying that is that the pasuk says le yachvol rechaim v'rochev. So it's using the term chabalah over there, which would seem to indicate that it is about entering into the house. And so therefore, it would be harder to argue in that case that that's the problem. So then you'd have to argue the other way, which is to suggest that the restriction of lo yachvol applies both in the house and out of the house. If that's the case, then there's a possibility that you could be in violation of lo yachvol rechaim v'rochev when you take it outside of the house, but not be in violation of tovo el beito. So that's another way to deal with it. The last way we'll discuss is the Balei HaTosafot over here, who suggest that there is no violation of lo tovo el beito lavo tovoto, because it is a lav hanitak leaseh. It is a lav that has the possibility of being rectified, because you can return it. It says, lo tovo el beito lavo tovoto, b'chutz tamod, etc., then it says, Hashem tashiv lo et avot, and you have to return it to him. So there is an obligation to return it to him once you have taken it illegally. So there is a way to rectify that which you have done wrong, and therefore it could be a lav anitak diaseh. And that's why the Gemara doesn't mention it, because Hashem tashiv is the direct response to lo tavo el beito. But that doesn't necessarily mean that lo yachbo rechaim berochem is subject to Hashem tashiv. Because there, it's not explicitly written. The assay is not explicitly associated with lo yachbol rechaim v'rochev. So much so that the Rambam goes as far as to say lo yachbol rechaim v'rochev applies even at the outset of the loan. At the origination of the loan, you may not take rechaim v'rochev. The Rambam is basically a dat yachid over here. The Ravid right away asks on the Rambam, how could it be that you can't take it at the outset? Lo yachbol, the definition is, again, we saw in Rashi yesterday, number one is against the will of the person. Obviously, at the outset or the origination, that's not against the will of the person, because otherwise he won't get the loan. So he has to make a decision. He doesn't have to give it and he won't get the loan. It's not against his will. Rashi said that yesterday. That's number one. And the Ravid also says, similar to the Ran, that Chabalah is only when you go into the house and take it, not in a case where the person's offering you the item. So therefore, most Rishonim believe that this restriction only applies after the loan is extended, not at the origination of the loan, but the Rambam has this unusual view that this applies even at the outset of the loan. Tosfot over here spends time discussing what's the meaning of Eimim Ashkenin in the Mishnah by the Almana, by Och, as well as what is the meaning of Eimim Ashkenin or Achuvel over here by Rechaim V'Rachav by Ochel Nefesh, according to Shmuel, who says that even a shliach beitin is restricted from entering into the house. So then how does he explain the meaning of mimashkenin over here, both in the case of machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon by the Almanah, as well as over here by Achuvel et Rechaim v'Rochev? And he comes to the conclusion that for Shmuel, v'lo kashem midei mipukta the Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon, the hashta eim mimashkenin ota, hainu eim menatchin ota. That the Eimim Ashkenin in the Machloki between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is not just Eimim Ashkenin, but similar to what he did in our Mishnah before, which is that he says that Eimim Ashkenin doesn't really mean to go into the house and take a mashkon, but rather minatrinuta, you don't grab it from them anywhere. And then Tosafot brings two views as to whether Shmuel thinks that nituach by Kelim of Ochel Nefesh is asur, or does he think it is mutar, in order to reconcile with his position that a shliach beitin can't enter into the house and be mashkein, or he does favor saying that Shmuel also restricts nituach even by kelim shosim by an ochel nefesh. So just like the shliach beitin might have a restriction of entering in the house by other items, by Ocha Nefesh, he has a complete restriction, which is both entering into the house as well as taking it outside of the house. So the Bali Tosafot are trying to reconcile Shmuel's position that we saw before with the meaning of the words Mimashkener, to take a Mashkon or a Chuvel in these Mishnayot. So now we get into a Machloket Amoraim over here. Amar Huna, Chaval Rechaim Lokesh Taim. If he takes the Rechaim, you get two Malkot. Now Rechaim here means not the mill as a whole, but the particular stone of the mill that is called the Rechaim, you get two sets of Malkot. Mishum Rechaim, because the Rechaim and Mishum Kinepesh Hu Chovel, because of the latter half of the Pasuk. Rechaim Varechev, if he takes both stones of the mill, Lokesh Shalosh, then he'll get three sets of Malkot, Mishum Rechaim Varechev, Umishum Kinefesh Hu Chovel. So, obviously Rav Huna over here sees the Kinefesh Hu Chovel not as being a broad din that extrapolates the din to other areas of Ochel Nefesh, but rather being on this particular Rechaim Vorochev, which means that Rechaim Vorochev become the paradigm over here, and therefore they're examples of Ochel Nefesh. And from then you can extrapolate. Had it just written Rechaim Vorochev, according to Rav Huna, it seems you could have extrapolated that to any Ochel Nefesh. These are just examples of items. So then, what's Ki Nefesh Hu Chovel? Nefesh Hu Chovel is going back on Rechaim Vorochev, telling you that there's another lav that exists over here, which is Nefesh Hu Chovel. So Lo Yachbol has three restrictions in it, Rechaim Vorochev and Nefesh. But Rav Huna's limitation is that Nefesh Hu Chovel reflects back on Rechaim Vorochev. Rav Yehuda Amar, Chaval Rechaim, if he took that stone, Lokachat. Rochev, Lokachat. He takes the Rochev, you get one. Rechaim Vorochev, Lokeshtaim. Ki Nefesh Hu Chovel, that comes, L'shar Dvarim Hu Da'ato, comes to include other things. Now, even though, as Rashi over here says, V'lav Lo Sufe Lav Arechaim Verochev, it's not coming to add on an additional Lav, Arechaim Verochev K'tiv Bereisha, that's written explicitly. V'itzri Ki Nefesh, Rabot Shar Kelim Sho'ochel Nefesh. So he still sees this as being an extension of Lo Yachvo. So even though maybe it's an easier way to read the Pasuk, Ki Nefesh U'chovel, he still sees it as a restriction that if you take other things, you'll be in violation of the restriction of Lo Yechbo. So they all see Lo Yechbo not being just on Rechaim Verochem, but also on Nefesh Hu Chovel. So now, here you have a machloket as to how we extend the din of Ochel Nefesh from Rechaim Verochem. Rav Huna sees the extension coming out of Rechaim Verochem, and therefore Nefesh Hu Chovel is unnecessary. It must be going back to duplicate the lav on Rechaim Verochem. The other hand, Rav Yehuda sees Rechaim Verochem as being a specific lav. Nefesh Hu Chovel is the mechanism for extending it to other areas of Ochel Nefesh. Therefore, when it's Rechaim Verochev, you're only chayav for them and not for Nefesh Hu Chovel, because Nefesh Hu Chovel only has application when it's not Rechaim Verochev. So for that reason, the conclusion from that is that if you violate Rechaim Verochev, you get Malkot for each one of them. The question between Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna is, do you also get Malkot for Ki Nefesh Hu Chovel? So for Rav Yehuda, it only happened if it's not Rechaim Verochev. For Rav Huna, it only happened if it is Rechaim Verochev. You will also get an additional set of Malkot because of Nefesh Hu Chovel. So now the Gemara makes the quantum leap, which is Lema Abai Verova Bepluto Rav Huna Rav Yehuda Kamiflegei. Let us say that Abai and Rava are arguing in the same Machloket as you have here between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Da'ama Rava Achal Na Lokesh Taim. You eat it raw, you get two malkot. Mishum na, one because of raw, or mishum kim tzliyesh. And the other one is because it must be roasted. Even though the definition of na is raw, the way the Gemara views na is that it's partially cooked. For completely raw, the Gemara uses the term chai, but I'm going to just use the term raw when I'm speaking about na, even though it doesn't literally mean raw, it means not fully cooked. What they are referring to here is the Korban HaPesach. For the Korban HaPesach, it says, don't eat from it raw or cooked, but rather ki im tzliish, but rather you must eat it roasted. So here you have a series of instructions. Don't eat it in a manner that is raw or cooked. That is clearly a lotase. The question is ki im tzliish, which sounds the same thing like ki nefesh uchovel, slightly different, we'll see in a second, but ki im tzliyesh is that an additional lav, which says that you must eat it roasted, meaning that if you don't eat it roasted, there's a separate restriction of being not roasted. Forget about what you are, which is either raw or cooked, but if you're not roasted, there's also restriction. Right? He sees this as a lav, which is, it must be roasted. That means that al tuchlu, when it's not roasted. That's how he views the pasuk, which is don't eat it when it's not roasted. That creates an additional lav over here. That's seemingly what Rava is suggesting over here, which is, Rava says if you eat it raw, you're in violation of al tuchlu mimenuna, but you're also in violation of ki im tzliyesh. So you have two violations over here. Mivushal, if you eat it cooked, lokesh taim, also over there you get two. Mishum mivushal, umishum kiim tzliyesh, as well as for cooking, as well as kiim tzliyesh. So now, if you eat it not umivushal, if you eat it both raw and cooked, lokesh shalosh, you're going to get three sets of malkot. Mishum na, mishum mivushal, mishum lo tochlenu, kiim tzliyesh. So now, that's Rova's opinion. Abaye amar, ein lokim alav shibilach alalot. You don't get a malkot when it's an all-encompassing lav. Right, so we have a number of things to discuss over here. The first of which is that when you look at this machlok in other places, the Gemara explains the machlok between Abaye and Rava, and it's clear what their machlok is, and it doesn't have anything to do with what we're speaking about over here. So Tosfot says, that's the derech of the Gemara. He says that many times, even if you know, or the Gemara gives you the reason somewhere else, the Gemara over here will speculate about maybe their machlokot are the same. So you can read it in one of two ways. Either, the Baalei Tosfot suggests, it's before they knew the reason. Meaning that this Gemara tried to figure this out. Later on, they knew the reason for Abaye and Rava, and it's no longer applicable. But originally they thought that way. Or sometimes the Gemara looks at things in an abstract manner, which is even though in the other case we know the reason, nevertheless over here, if we just take it in an abstract form, maybe we can compare, maybe we can see a correlation between the two. That's number one. Number two is, it's not mentioned here, the Baalei Tosafot mentioned this in other places in Shas, which is he calls this, mina sugyot amitchalfot. These are sugyot that get flipped. And he goes through a series of Gemaras in Shas, where you have opinions in the Gemara, and you find the exact same Gemara found somewhere else, with the opinions reversed. And that here, Abaye and Rava, we have their opinions laid out as they are here. There are other places in Shas, where the exact same machloket is brought down. You can see over here, it's brought down in Psachim, but also it's brought down in Nazir, in other places. And over there, Abaye and Rava's positions are flipped. Some places you have it Abaye and Rava the way we have it here. In some ways, it's the exact same sugi, exact same machloket, and their opinions are flipped. You could deal with that in different ways, which is either there's a problem in the Misora, or there was a machloket about the Misora. So you have them flipped, and he gives many examples in Shas where you have that. Obviously, it has a big nafkamina, because Abaye and Rava, halacha k'Rava. So in determining whether the halacha is like Rava, you need to know which Rava you're speaking about. That's the next thing. The third thing that is very difficult about the sugya, again, we're not going to delve as deeply here because the main sugya is back in Psachim and in other places in Nazir, but what is the definition of a lav shibichlalot? The Gemara uses the term lav shibichlalot in different contexts. It uses it here, but it also uses it for the pasuk of lo tuchlu al adam. Lo tuchlu al adam is a restriction that the Gemara learns from that. Many things. First of all, you're not allowed to eat the korban before the dam goes on the mizbeach. You're not allowed to eat before you daven in the morning. There are all these disparate lavim that are learned out of lo tochlu al adam. Over there, the Gemara calls that lav shibichlalot. So what's clear is that lav shibichlalot, everybody agrees that you don't get malkot for, because that lav shibichlalot is a lav where the Gemara darshins from it the meaning of the lav to be nothing like its simple meaning in the pasuk. Its simple meaning in the pasuk is lo tochlu al adam, which is basically do not eat the blood. The fact that the Gemara took it and darshan it betor shebapeh in all different directions means that those are restrictions, maybe even restrictions d'oraita, but it's a lav shebichlalot because it incorporates or encompasses so many different matters that are not obvious from the pasuk and not necessarily correlated. They're totally different items. It's still a restriction. Despite that fact, the lav shebichlalot, which the Gemara tells us, lav shebichlalot, ein lokim nalav. You do not get malkot, and all the monei mitzvot, or all the poskei rishonim, make it clear that you're not going to get malkot there. Here we have a different type of lav shebichlalot, which is here the lav shebichlalot is generally a statement that follows a pirut, or the other way around. It's a statement, and then there's details afterwards, which is that you have a general or generic restriction, but you also have particulars that are listed. In that situation, the Gemara here, we see, calls it a lav shebichlalot. And calling it a lav shebichlalot is clearly different than lo tochlu al adam, because here, it's the simple reading of what the meaning of the pasuk is. It's a klal because it has broader perspective or broader capture than the other items that are enumerated in the pasuk. And so there, you have the machloket over here between Abai and Rava, as well as a separate machloket between Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna. And in the end, you have a machloket rishonim as to how to paskin in these situations when you have a lav shebichlalot that is connected to detail mitzvot. So the classic case here is a case where you have na, vushal, and kim tzliyesh. How many sets of makot will you get in this case? So here you have a machlok between the Rambam and the Ramban as to how we paskin when it comes to this issue. The Rambam says that you will get malkot if you do any one of the particular items. You will get malkot for them. For instance here, if you ate it na mevushal, you will get malkot. But if you ate na and mevushal, if you ate both of those, you'd also only get one set of malkot because there's only one lav that is associated with it, which is al tochlu. You may not eat it. Unless the Torah Shebaal Peh specifically separates out the items or divides items into separate lavin, we consider it to be one lav, which is now mevushal, now are incorporated under one lav. Since they're incorporated under one lav, you can only get one set of malkot for na and mevushal. The other hand, the Ramban views each one of them to be separate, and therefore, al tochlu mimenu na umevushal. If you eat it na, you get malkot. Mevushal, you get malkot, similar to the Rambam. But if you ate it na and mevushal, according to the Ramban, you will get two sets of malkot, unlike the Rambam, where you'd only get one set of malkot over there, because you ate both na and mevushal. So each item is being seen separately. So that's just in a broad perspective. Again, there are other Rishonim. I'm just giving the Rambam and the Ramban. Other Rishonim who have different or slightly more nuanced formulations of the same thing about what we do in these situations of lav shebichlalot, where there's also details in the psukim. How do we deal with the details? And how do we deal with the klal? Both of those are subject to the machloket, which is, do you get a malkot for each individual item? Or do you get it for each of these items, but not all of them together? Because when they're together, you're still subject to one lav, which is al-tochlu. Or do we see al-tochlu being, as if it says al-tochlu na, al-tochlu mevushal? And then you have to deal with the lav shebichlalot as well, whether there's malkot for that. In the Gemara Pesachim, there's also two different versions of this machloket. And that is whether, when Abaye argues over here, in lukin alav shebichlalot, what does that mean? Whether the meaning of Abaye's statement, in lukin alav shebichlalot, means you don't get malkot at all? Or does it mean that, in lukesh taim elachat, mean that you do have malkot, but it's more limited than the scope of what Rava suggests? So those are the two lishonot that we find in the Gemara in Pesachim as to whether Abaye says that you don't get malkot whatsoever, or whether you get one set of malkot, not two. And then within that explanation, Rashi and Tosafot, Rashi the Beinu Tam over there argue as to the meaning of what it means that you get one set of malkot and not two sets of malkot. So in addition, the complexities get deeper, both because Abaye and Rava's positions are flipped other places in Shas. In the case where we have it in Pesachim, there's two different versions of it. And in the version where Rabbi says you don't get Malkot at all because of Lav Shebichlalot, there's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot how to read that. So again, here you have multiple dimensions about how the Machloket plays out. Just giving you it just as background so you understand. That's why the Bali and Tosafot are so verbose over here, because they're trying to deal with reconciling between this and the other Gemarot, and exactly how does it fit in. So then the Gemara says, Lema Abaye damar ka Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say Abaye holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the klal does not apply, or you don't get malkot for it. Rava amar ta ka Rav Huna, that says you do get malkot for the klal. Amelcha Rava ana damar afilu ka Rabbi Yehuda. Rava says, I can even hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Akan lo kamar Rabbi Yehuda atam, ela dechi nefesh hu chovel, lo mashma rechaim v'rochev. I can hold like Rabbi Yehuda, who says over here, that nefesh u'chovel is not an additional set of malkot over here, because the ki nefesh u'chovel lo mashma rechaim v'rochev. Over there, it sounds like it's a separate din, rechaim v'rochev. Ki nefesh u'chavel sounds like a totally independent statement. So that independent statement is what compels Rabbi Yehuda to say that there's an additional set of malkot over here. Hilkach, l'shar dvarim hudata. That's why over here it's extraneous in nature, and therefore it's used to learn to other items, not in Rechaim v'rochev. Of a hocha, by the case of the psachim, where it's obvious, al tuchler miminah uvashil mivushal b'mayim, kiim tzliyesh, that kiim tzliyesh is clearly applicable to navushal. Navushal are not tzliyesh. So by definition, kiim tzliyesh is also precluding now mivushal. So the mayato, what is it coming for? It's not coming to expand. It's coming to tell you may not have tzliyesh. And therefore, shmaminah, the lav. It's coming to add on an additional lav over here. Even though the Gemara in Psachim does have additional issues to learn from ki'im tzliyesh, to preclude other types of cooking, or eating in a manner that's completely raw, or eating it cooked in chamei tveria, the Gemara does have other things to include from it. So that's what the Balei Tosafot over here try to deal with, which is, don't we need this pasuk to teach us these other items? But it seems that there's still a difference between the two psukim. Ki nefesh hu chovel comes to teach you about items that are completely different, or in a completely different category than Rechaim v'Rochev. Whereas when you speak about here ki im tzliyesh, even if it includes other types of chai and mivushal b'chamei tveria, those are just nuances of the na and the mivushal. And so therefore, it's not that it's totally different category. It's extending the category, but not creating totally new area of inclusion here. And therefore, you could differentiate between the cases, even if you say you have a limud for ki'im tzliyesh. So does it also brings another possibility, which is the nature of the pasuk. By ki nefesh hu chovel, it's explaining to you a restriction. It's almost giving you the reason behind the problem here. And therefore, it's clearly expansive in nature, or it's giving you an additional reasoning over here. Whereas, by the case of ki'im tzliyesh, it's not giving you a new explanation for the isur. It's giving you another defined term, which is it must be tzliyesh. And so therefore, it's just another tag along the way. It's not giving you a whole new perspective on the lab. So that's the way the Balei Tosafot try to deal with it. And then, v'abaye can say, amar lecha, ana damri afilu l'Rav Huna. I can even hold like Rav Huna. Over here, nefesh u'chovel is completely unnecessary because you could have extrapolated the din from Rechaim v'Rochev. Since it's extraneous, we throw it back on Rechaim v'Rochev to make that an additional lav that you overhear. And the reason might be because Rechaim v'Rochev is the core area where the women enter into the food preparation process, which is that the work in the field and bringing it in from the field is the work of the men. Then once it's brought into the house, the women take over. The milling is where the women begin their ochel nefesh, or they begin the processing of the item. And that is an area where the Torah emphasizes there's a restriction of Rechaim v'Rochev. Yes, it applies to all ochel nefesh, but why did it focus on this area? Because that's the beginning of the ochel nefesh processing by the woman. It's where her value added comes into the process. And then the Torah goes and reiterates that by saying, ki nefesh u'chovel, because then you are interrupting both her livelihood as well as their ability to prepare food, which are their basic necessities. And for that reason, it focused in Rechaim v'Rochev, but also puts on top of that an additional lav that you're chayav to lavin. Of a hocha, by the case of the Korban HaPesach, it is not an extra lav because we need it. The Kedetanya, because we have a braita, that when it comes to a kumachol tzvi, that you're only chayav for eating the Korban HaPesach improperly when you could have eaten it properly. And that is at a time where you cannot eat it roasted. That means that the Korban HaPesach is shechted on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. You cannot eat the Korban HaPesach until nightfall. So there's a period in time between the Shechita HaPesach and the Achila HaPesach. So that window of time in between before nightfall, you're not allowed to eat the Korban HaPesach roasted. If you go ahead and eat it somewhat uncooked and fully cooked, in that case, you will not be in violation of the lav. Because what we're saying here is the hekesh between sliyesh and not mevushal teaches you when sliyesh is applicable, then mevushal not applicable. When sliyesh is not applicable, like during the day, enu babachol tochal na, then there is no restriction. So he says over there, it's not completely extraneous. Over there, we need it to teach us not the din of you must eat it roasted and nothing else, but you need it to teach us the din that only at the time where it's permissible to eat it roasted is there a restriction of na and mevushal. Okay, we're going to stop here. Five lines down on the top of Kuf Tet Zayin Omud Aleph.